Paige Olson is going to join us in just a moment to talk about how to talk to your kids about things like what happened in Nice, France yesterday and terrorism and all this sort of thing. I mean, it's tough to talk to kids about it. But first, I want to tell you about my friends over at Aquasana. They make the home water filtration system for your house to turn your poisonous drinking water that comes out of the tap into absolutely safe and delicious water. And you could shower in it, too, and not have to worry about whatever the poison in there is doing to your skin. And don't forget, if there's chlorine in your water, and I promise there's a lot of it in there, because most municipalities use the chlorine to clean up the water, the Aquasana Rhino water filtration system removes 97% of the chlorine in your tap water because it sticks to your shower, it evaporates, and then that chlorine gas just floats around your house, and your kids are breathing it. So your family deserves better cooking, better tasting, safe water. And just for listening to me talk about Aquasana, you get a 40% off deal and free shipping on a complete system. Go to the sponsor page on our website, click on the Aquasana button, and the complete 1 million gallon Rhino whole house water filtration system usually sells for $1,600 or so, is yours for just $978.99. Aquasana, live healthy. It's Phil Hewlett and friends. Skyler Charisma is here with me. I'm Phil. Hi, how are you? We grown-ups are still trying to absorb and understand news of this latest terror attack in Nice, France, where a guy in a truck, perhaps acting alone, maybe there were accomplices, maybe it was orchestrated by a larger group like ISIS. We don't know yet. The facts are still coming out. It seems like 80-plus, maybe 84 people are dead. A couple of Americans of the dead, 10 to 12 or so, were children. As adults, we take in this information, we try to resolve it in our brains, but our children are right there when the TV's on, listening and watching, trying to understand, forming opinions, and if you don't get in there and talk about it, someone else will. So how do you approach it? Let's bring on a regular on the program, but hasn't been here in a while. Nice to have her back. She's the founder of Innovative Play for Kids, Paige Olson. Hello.
Hello.
So serious stuff. I mean, we're usually just yucking it up on the program, but you offer a lot of good advice on a lot of different things. This could be tricky business for parents because you could inadvertently initiate feelings of hate towards certain people, couldn't you?
Yeah, you can. If you're not real careful about what comes out of your mouth and also knowing who your child is, absolutely.
Yeah, and that's important. I mean, you better get to know your kid. Is the ethnic or religious component the hardest part of all of this to discuss?
I really don't think so. I really think that the hardest part to discuss is this idea that you are one person in a world that has different perspectives and different feelings. While in the United States, we may find the color of our skin, which we have no control over, to be the defining thing for some reason, and I don't, you know, parts of not Europe, but Lebanon and those the Middle East.
Yeah.
It goes all the way back to the city states. So it's cultural, but it's deeper than that. It's basically where's your ancestral family from, and the battles that go all the way back to the ancient times.
Yeah.
And then you have the culture. We're a melting pot here. So then you have the different cultures coming and clashing, and instead of understanding that we have different perspectives in the world.
Yeah. But mommy, do people want to kill me? And is it because I look different?
And that's, you know, that's a real question for a child, and it's a real fear for a parent. And, you know, how do you answer that? Absolutely, you could say yes, but at the same time, you don't want to say yes. We're living in a fear world, and the only way to get through fear is knowledge.
Yeah.
Fear diminishes, so you give the child knowledge, and you need to say, you know what, sweetheart, most people in this world know they don't want to harm you because of who you are,
mm-hmm.
culturally, skin color, whatever, who you are. They don't want to hurt you, and you don't want to hurt anybody else.
Yeah. Do kids also wonder at some point? I mean, it seems obvious to us that, okay, we're the good guys. Mm-hmm. They're the bad guys if they're killing people. But do the kids at some point, does the line get blurred and they wonder, are we the bad guys?
Absolutely. And I think part of the reason the line gets blurred is because we lose touch with who we are, where we're from. And if our parents can't supply a solid foundation of where you're from and who you are, and not in a negative context, but how did you get to be where you are? How did you travel to be where you are? And then understand the periods that that happened. I mean, my family came to the United States in the 1630s, for example, and they were running away from persecution, but then they became the persecutors. And so when I raised my family, we studied that history, and we said, look, when they were there, this happened to him, and look at how easy it is to become that person when you get to a new place.
Yeah.
And so we need to fight against that. We need to, instead of doing that, we need to ask ourselves, why am I doing what I'm doing? Am I hurting inside? Am I frustrated? Am I afraid? And then deal with those feelings. And so it's when you talk to your child, it's not a blanket conversation. It's asking questions that helps you understand what they're feeling and address those issues, not your issues, their issues. If they're fear about skin color, address it from, I addressed it with my kids, from the sun. It's not a choice.
Yeah.
If there's fear about culture, learn about the other culture and figure out how you can interface. This is all these actions are frustration, anger, fear that go back generationally.
Is it very easy these days for a child to become desensitized to death and human suffering?
I hate to use the word. I mean, I used to work for the medical examiner up here, so I used to be a field investigator. I dealt with death, notified people of death in the family, dealt with all ages from SIDS all the way up. And I don't believe, in my personal belief, I don't believe we become hardened to death. I believe we might force ourselves or convince ourselves we are, but underneath that is the emotion and the feeling. And we just deny the feeling of loss. We don't allow ourselves to grieve. And I don't think we become desensitized to it. I think what we see now is we become angry. I mean, look at what's happened around the world. We become angry. In the United States, that was anger. And it was anger from loss. And somebody thought he had the right to take more lives. And there's just this anger to it. Mm-hmm. So we're not dealing with it correctly because we're not able to put it in perspective and then come together and deal from different perspectives and heal the wounds that are there because we shut down. We're no longer listening. We're just acting because our emotional intelligence is not of the logic type. It's of the emotional ancient brain type, and we're shut down.
Yeah. Children, Paige Olson, to one degree or another, want attention. Most of them get it.
Right.
Not so much, some of them.
Right.
The whole concept of terrorism essentially is killing people to get attention. Is it far-fetched to think a child might grasp that idea on some level and perhaps see it as an option?
I don't think that kids can grasp that it's about getting attention.
How about age appropriate, though? I mean, say 12, 13, 14.
Yeah, I think once they get into the logic brain, so you're talking about maybe some junior high, but definitely high schoolers, absolutely. I mean, you can start talking about, I mean, even those people don't understand that necessarily death is permanent. Look at the stupid things they do. It's not going to happen to me, whatever. And so they have that. They might know death is permanent, but they don't understand it's not going to happen to me. I can go do this. I can do what I want, and it won't happen to me. The under 10 crowd, when they're still looking concrete thinkers and whatever, they don't understand that death necessarily that death is permanent unless they're faced with it, and then they struggle with it. You see a lot of people that lose kids, parents young, really struggle with the idea that death is permanent. They can't come back, and how you help them realize they're in your heart. You know, and so and the memories, and you help them figure out how to keep that person alive. And you see that in a lot of different movies and stuff like that on how you keep somebody alive that's not physically here. So in the different stages, and I think there's a lot of adults at all ages that just really struggle with this idea of death today. You know, we have this idea that we're not supposed to die. The medical community is supposed to keep us alive. And so it's just that idea. So, yeah, we really struggle with this.
Yeah. Well, with death and terrorism and racial tension and all these different things, in your work, when you develop innovative ways for children to play, are there useful games to help kids through things like that?
Well, I think the most important thing is that you need to allow them to experiment with it. I mean, it's a feeling, okay? We're not talking about something that's tactile, that's concrete. And everybody has a different temperament. There are 9 parts to this temperament. We all have different temperaments, so we all are going to engage in the world slightly differently. And so it's when we deny them the privilege, the right almost, to experiment with those feelings in unstructured play, they're going to at some point want to experiment with them. And the older they get, the more they're going to do it wrong. For example, here, my children had this huge interest in military. They're both firefighters, but growing up, they had this big interest in the military and World War II in particular, and just trying to put themselves in the place of these different military people and what were they going under and the strategy and the feelings. And there was a time my son and his friend, they were about 10, they experimented with death. I mean, they experimented with trying to figure out how do you die and what is it like. And I could have shut it down. But what it's done is in their own way, in unstructured play, they were allowed the privilege to experiment with this feeling, and they needed to. It came from, it was driven from within them, and it gave them a new perspective on this thing. And the violent, so how do you feel if you're, you know, pretending to kill someone? How do you feel when you're dying? You know, my kids reenacted the World War I soccer game, a Christmas time soccer game. It's, you need to give them that safe place to feel.
Nobody was hurt when they were experimenting with death, just
to
be clear.
No. They built their PVC, you know, weapons or wooden weapons that were replicas. I mean, no, this was, the whole idea is that was what they were doing, is experimenting with what does it mean to die? Hmm. How does it feel to die with wooden weapons and PVC type weapons? I didn't tell them to do it or not to do it. It was just a part of their unstructured play. And my people might go, that's so horrible. But you know what? My son now is better able to go out there and help those people who are dying, who are near death, who are dead. How does he deal with the families? How does he help them through this as a firefighter? He has asked those questions, and as a child in unstructured play, been given the privilege to try and answer those questions. And so he now has some language and some understanding to some extent because he's engaged with some of that stuff. And obviously, he hasn't lost a parent and he hasn't lost a sibling. But by being allowed to play, he's engaged in those feelings. And that's what matters. And so to deny our children something that's unstructured that we can create that's safe, we can put some boundaries on it, but let them experiment with feelings and come in contact with who am I and you know, how does this talk to them? Help them know themselves. You know, when we don't let them get to know themselves, we become misunderstood and we become angry. And depending upon our temperament, depends upon how that shows.
Powerful stuff, Paige Olson, and it's always great to hear the conviction and emotion behind your thinking and your teaching. Paige-Olson.com. That's P-A-G-E. Then put that little hyphen in there, then O-L-S-O-N.com. You want to hear more, and Paige will come out and talk to your company, too. You'll do that, won't you?
Absolutely.
Yes. Well, thanks so much for being on the program. We'll have you back again on a happier topic soon, I promise.
Oh, thank you for having me.
All right. There she goes, Paige Olson. All right. Skylar, see? Good stuff, huh?
Really good stuff. You know, I read somewhere, teach your children how to think, not what to think. And what she said really spoke to me about that.
That's right. And kids should be afraid of robots. We're going to tell you about that in just a moment. But I want to tell you about Lunar Pages. If you run a company and you have a website that sells stuff, you need it not only to be able to sell things securely, but you want to fend off the hackers. Lunar Pages will handle your business web stuff, large, small, or in between, with reliable, scalable web hosting. Their business packages include all the tools and scripts and support you need to run an efficient, secure business website, cloud computing, storage, dedicated IP, SSL certificates from small to large. Secure Live is their patented website hack protection service. It continually monitors your server and stops the hackers before they get in. Hundreds of scripts, all the language support your developers expect. Go to our sponsor page at philhewlettandfriends.com. Look for the Lunar Pages button. Click on it, and you'll receive deep discounts and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Go check out Lunar Pages now. All right. We went a little long in the first half of this segment, but that's okay. We want to talk a little more about kids. And in this world, the whole idea of robots doing things for us continues to expand. And we keep hearing about people having run-ins with robots. And you hate when it's a little kid, Skylar.
Oh, you absolutely do, especially when it's by a security robot. Yeah, this happened at a mall up north in Northern California. A 300-pound security robot ran over a toddler.
Oh.
At the mall. 5 foot tall, by the way. 300 pounds, 5 foot tall.
Yikes.
He was 16 months old. He only suffered a swollen foot and several scrapes. And this happened at the Stanford Shopping Center in Palo Alto. According to mom, the robot hit her son's head, and so he fell down, facing down on the floor.
Did the robot do that Terminator thing? Saw the readout in his brain and saw that the kid was a threat somehow and decided to take him down.
I think so. I actually think the robot is Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, okay.
But at that point, the robot didn't stop. It kept moving forward, as a result, running over the child's foot. And mom said that the robot would have run over her son's other foot had her husband not pulled the boy away.
Yeah.
So the shopping center is obviously investigating the incident, and they're going to dock all of their security robots until further notice. But they've been using them for about a year.
Yeah. Can they make the security robots look like Kevin James, the Paul Blart mall cop guy?
And put them on Segways?
Well, maybe they could just be like a Segway, but you know, it's all connected. It's just one piece as opposed to two pieces.
Yeah, they're going to give them little mustaches, a little pot belly. It's going to be great. It's going to be the new thing.
Yeah. All right.
You're so
what?
You're full of just brilliant ideas today.
Well, you know, I just see the world in colors.
Yes.
By the way, there aren't just blue-collar and white-collar workers anymore. Did you know that?
No, like, what do you mean?
Like Paul Blart, for instance, is he a blue collar or a white collar worker? There are other colors, like red collar for government workers, green collar for people in jobs that are good for the environment. You see?
I get that. Yeah.
You have different colors.
Mm-hmm. How long has that been a thing?
Probably a week or two.
Yeah. National blue collar, white collar, red collar,
green collar. Yeah. That only one person has ever been elected to Congress while they were in jail.
How did that even happen?
Matthew Lyon was a Democratic Republican back in 1798. They actually had that party. It was kind of a melange of our two-party system. He was from Vermont. He got elected while he was doing 4 months in jail. He was convicted under the Alien and Sedition Acts for writing negative things about John Adams.
Ugh.
Back then, you couldn't write bad things about your president.
No.
You get thrown in jail.
A bunch times have changed.
Abraham Lincoln threatened to throw a bunch of senators who were in favor of slavery. He was going to send them up to Canada.
Honest Abe.
Yeah. Hey, are you a good listener?
Skyler? I'm a great listener. I am, actually.
I listen, but then I have a bad memory, so it seems like I'm a bad listener. But if we listened like a dog, we might get somewhere in life. That's the premise of the dogtologist, Jeff Lazarus. He's been on the show before. He's got a book called Dogtology, but he has a new book called Listen Like a Dog and Make Your Mark on the World. And he joins us in just a few minutes from now to teach us to listen like a dog. Are dogs actually good listeners?
I guess so.
And then what do they do with that information?
They're tiny
little dog brains.
They're just vaults. They keep so many secrets.
That's coming up in the next segment of Phil Hewlett and Friends. Here's a great idea for your next outing. A cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door. And the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553.